I'm actually really thankful that that Brother Guerrieri had the English Standard Version. The text for our lesson this evening will be Psalms 1, and I had it happen one time that the reading was from a different version, and I'd done my entire lesson around some quirk phrasing that was in a different version, and it was kind of embarrassing because I spent the entire lesson trying to combat against a very kind of different view of the passage, which had come from the reading. So it works out really well that that nothing like that can go awry this time. I don't have any slides. I hope that's going to be okay. I'm not the best slide maker, and it would have taken me probably as much time to put the slides together as it did to put the whole lesson together, because really my drawing is a little circle for a face and a long line for a body, and it kind of comes out of my slides that way. So you'll kind of have to bear with me. I'm going to talk through a few things here, which probably would have been better if I'd had a little bit of illustration, but maybe next time I'll get my act together. I heard about a recent study, read this online a few weeks ago, started hitting the news outlets. You probably heard of it too, that they did this recent study. I mean, that's one of those great phrases, right? A recent study. I mean, it really doesn't mean anything at all. I mean, it could have been done by some guy in his garage who was giving him a government grant. I don't know. But this guy supposedly did a study recently, and it said that, lo and behold, if humans are lost, they go in circles. Really. He finally really studied this. And because this is one of those little bits of common wisdom, right? That you feel like if people are lost, they must go in circles. And supposedly this guy did this big study, and it wasn't some guy in his garage. He actually dropped some people in the Sahara Desert and outfitted them with GPS receivers, which didn't do them a bit of good. It wasn't the type of receivers that you could look at the map. They were just sending a signal back. And then he traced what they did, and he did the same thing with them in the Black Forest in Germany. And then he traced what happened. They had neat little drawings of what the folks had done. One guy went in a perfect circle, I guess, just repeatedly. And somebody else wandered off here and kind of did some weird sawtooth thing. But what they said is, no matter what happened, in all instances, almost every one of them ended up not that far from where they had been dropped, right? And I don't know, but I'm reading through these blogs, and you always have people on comment. The smartest people are the ones that comment on blogs, right? Because they know everything. And so some guy comes in and he says, yeah, well, that's why whenever you go to look for a dead hiker, they're always, really, if they're lost, they're always really close to where the last place was. Like, I have no idea. I have no point of reference whether or not that's true. But according to this study, people really do go in circles when they're lost. And so I printed out some little elements of this study that I was going to read, because I kind of found it kind of interesting. It said that people are naturally wired to walk around and around in circles rather than in straight lines without landmarks as guides, research has found. That was kind of the overarching theme. The finding emphasizes the importance of being prepared if you're going to set off into the wilderness or even into a maze of city streets. Instead, Suman, and I guess that's the guy who did the study, Suman suggests that people circle when their internal sense of straight ahead becomes corrupted by random errors in their sense of touch, balance, or spatial awareness. Small errors lead to random walks, while large errors cause circling, and that has a massive impact on their ability to get well anywhere. Despite walking for 50 minutes, most of these people never made it very far. Within a few minutes, their average distance from the starting point leveled off, so they were usually around 100 meters of it. A visual cue, however, can do wonders for resetting our navigation. If Suman allowed his blindfolded bumblers to lift their blindfolds for a minute out of every 5 or 10, they managed to recalibrate their sense of straight ahead and started each block of time in a straight line again. As Suman himself concludes, ironically, in the age of ubiquitous navigation systems and airplanes, cars, and even mobile phones, we are only beginning to understand how humans navigate through their environment, exploring uncharted terrain. His study shows that even the simple act of walking in a straight line is more complex than it might first appear. And really this really resonates with me. I think I've mentioned to you guys that I have a horrible sense of direction. My little GPS has been, it turned my whole life around. I mean, it's I'm almost like an evangelist for the little GPS, because I go on travel now and I don't get lost in bad areas and big cities, and it's much, much nicer. And my wife feels better about me. I get places in a lot less stressed state. It's all good. I've been this way since I was a little kid. I can't find my way around in Ridgecrest, you know, which isn't a good thing. I'm not making this up, right? So I go to the Zerns' house last night to drop Addie off at the Devo, and I got the GPS out, baby. Even though they're like a half a mile away from my house, right? but I did, you know, and it's like a crutch. So this kind of resonates with me. But the point I want to make to you this evening. And one of the main points, we're going to kind of track this along here, because I think it's one of the main points of Psalms 1 when we look at it, is that this thing about humans, that last piece that I read, where even the simple act of walking in a straight line is more complex than it might appear, that's true not only when we're physically lost in the woods, but also when we're mentally lost in the woods, when we're mentally blindfolded. Okay, that's the point I want us to get our arms around this evening. We need a landmark, a guide, all right? A point of reference, so that when we lift our blindfolds up, right, then we're focused on something and we can keep going in a straight line. Okay, so if we walk according to the world around us, we're not going to get very far from our starting point. And you can see that. You can see that in people's lives. Kind of as people go more and more downhill, and as they look to the Bible less and less, and as the word Jesus, I tell my high school class that the word Jesus coming out of people's mouths nowadays isn't really, it could be Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. They're talking about somebody that has no relation to the person we find in the Bible. He's more what they learned about watching on TV with, you know, peace marchers in the 60s or something. And he doesn't really, the word, the name, doesn't have any relationship necessarily. He's like a pagan god. And as we kind of veer more and more away from the grounding to where we get any knowledge all about Jesus, as we go further and further away from that, okay, then what we find more and more is people begin to go around in circles, and they don't leave their point of origin very far. You know, we have sort of cultural immaturity that sets in, right? Their point of origin being their birth and their childhood, and people don't seem to get very far from that. They just kind of go around and around in circles around the point of a point of when they were brought into the world. And I think that this is a biblical principle. I think that God teaches us in His Word that unless you re-zero and unless you take a bearing point from the Bible and set out according to it, that you will just get lost and go in circles, and you will not get very far. So let's start in. So the first two verses of Psalms 1 go like this. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. We're going to go through three sections here, each of two verses apiece, and on each section we're going to have a set of contrasts, okay? So we have this first set of contrasts that comes right in that says, and this contrast here is between the man who walks in the counsel of the wicked, the way of sinners, or sits in the seat of scoffers, and the contrast here is to a person who doesn't do that, a person who instead looks on the law of the Lord, delights in the law of the Lord, and on this law meditates day and night. Okay? So the direction we receive in life should come, as I said a second ago, should come from the Lord and not from the world. Now, I want to stop for just a second because, you know, it's really easy. We do this a lot, right? Everybody says, I said, oh, the world. Yeah, that's good. That's a nice soft phrase, right? That doesn't really mean too much, and everybody knows the world is bad. So if I say the world, then that doesn't mean, you know, your atheist great aunt who you're going to run into at Thanksgiving time, who pumps your head full of idiotic notions, right? But really, the world is the people in it, right? When we say the world, we're not talking about rocks and trees and grass. Okay, that's not what we refer to there. We're referring to actual people with ideals and thought processes and things. And so these are the things that we're told not to walk in the counsel of, right? So in this first verse, we're told not to walk, not to stand, not to sit, right? In the counsel of the wicked, in the way of sinners, or in the seat of scoffers, okay? So this talks about us not living in a culture of this world that is around us, right, of these other people, and of taking the things that they say always with a grain of salt and always measuring it against some other source. And that's what we have to do, okay? Because remember, they're walking in circles. Always keep that in mind, that they've got the blindfold on, right? And they don't do this very often to go look around, okay? So because of that, if the blind lead the blind, they both fall into the pit, right? Our Lord said that, okay? And it's a true story. So the contrast here, our bearing, our way forward becomes the word. I really want to focus just a little bit. So he says here that the delight is in the law of the Lord, and something else. There's something else that they do. They meditate on it day and night. Why do they have to do that? Right? Why can't they just, you know, read it, I don't know, once a week or so? Well, we're immersed in the world. And everything we do, right? You go to work, you go to school, you sit down, you watch a little TV, all that stuff. That's all coming from outside of the Word, right? You have to take a positive effort and swim upstream. You have to swim upstream, right, in your approach to the Word, in your approach to the Bible, right? This is one of those places where the devil whispers in your ear constantly. You really don't have time. You don't have time to sit down and look at the Bible right now because you have something else to do. There's some cleaning to do. There's some exercise. After all, you've gotten fat, and it's from sitting around and reading other books. And so, you know, when you think about reading the Bible, now's the time when you suddenly get inspired to go exercise. Because after all, reading books is bad for you, the doctor says, and the Bible's a book, so you shouldn't sit down and on your behind anymore. And so you don't. And you get up, and the one time you exercise is when you read the Bible, right? So instead of doing that, there's always something else to do. And so that's the way it works, right? We have so many hours in the day, and all you people we're all getting older here, and it always seems to get shorter and shorter, right? And so the time goes by faster and faster, and you realize that weeks have passed, and you haven't cracked the Word at all, except when you're in church, and somebody said, why don't you go look up this passage with me? All right, and I'm the same way, okay? So all of us are in the same boat together. And so in Psalms 1, 1 and 2, he says he contrasts this person who delights in the law of the Lord, and not just at his mouth. He doesn't just yak about it, right? But he meditates on it day and night, okay? He lives in it, he sleeps in it, he breathes it, he meditates on it day and night, okay? In other words, these aren't short glimpses like in the man's study, right? It's not like this. You know, he said when they could look, when the study participants could look for a little bit, they could get their bearings, and for a while they'd walk straight, right? Well, what God says, why don't you just take that blindfold off, right? And the more that you live in the Word, the more the blindfold is off. Now, in the next two verses, in 3 and 4, we get another, the psalmist shifts, and we get yet another set of contrasts, which go down the same path, right? And it says, he is like a tree. Now, who is this he? This he is the one who finds delight in the law of the Lord and meditates on it day and night. It says, he is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. And all that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. An important point here, okay? So, for a while, and he's not here. I hate talking about people when they're not here, but he won't mind. Eric Olson was down the street helping a crew of people remove a tree from a guy's yard, all right? And he says, it's really hard. It was kind of a big tree. It's really, really hard to yank this tree out. They had all sorts of machinery down there, and they dug this whole guy's yard up just, it was insane. There was a huge pit, and the poor trunk, I mean, it's easy to whack the top off, but the trunk was just sitting in there, and there was like a team of 10 guys sitting there just laboring with this thing over and over again to get that tree to move, to just budge a little bit. They worked at it day after day. I don't know how long it took, but it took a while. They had to call in external people and all sorts of stuff. Finally, they got this tree removed, okay? But a tree is kind of famous for not being something that's easy to get out of the ground, right? It's not something that is easy to move. And so we get this contrast between the guy who meditates on the law of the Lord, who delights, who delights in it. He meditates on it day and night, and he's like this tree. He's like immovable, okay? And we know that it's the movement, right, because of what the contrast here is. What is the contrast to? The contrast is to chaff, and it says, which the wind drives away, right? Chaff. You know how easy it is to move chaff? Chaff, just a sec. Oh, I'm really sorry. That's how easy it is to move chaff, right? So you can sneeze and chaff is gone. Chaff is like sawdust, right? I've got this door, I'm trying to move into my house, and we finally got it in. And I really can't stand it. The houses can't make things square, right? So I'm sanding this edge of this door down, right? And there's sand all over the place, but you know, to get rid of the grit and stuff, it just kind of blows away. You kind of sweep it a little bit and it's out of the garage. This is a far cry from the guy spending a week down the street yanking a tree out. Okay? So this contrast of movability is here set up between two types of people. The one man who delights in the law of the Lord, who meditates on it day and night, and the wicked, who are like chaff. You got trees versus chaff, right? And I'm pretty sure that if, you know, chaff blows down the street, but that tree wasn't going anywhere. We have lots of wind down my street. It's been blown like crazy for years, and that tree's still been there the whole time, right? It's not going anywhere, or at least it didn't until they spend like a week and a half trying to get rid of it. So, if we go to Matthew 7, all right, so Matthew 7, 24, because this is not really just an Old Testament thing, right? I mean, this should be bringing something else into your mind, another story that our master told down in Matthew 7. Starting in 24. So remember that the one who meditates on the law is difficult to move. They have a firm foundation that they sink their roots into. And it says that everyone who hears these words of mine and does them, Matthew 7:24, will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And the wicked, okay, now those are like the chaff, right? They're as movable as chaff. They're at the whim of culture. They're at the whim of the things around them. They're at the whim of every little bad thing that happens to them, it shakes them up. And every little good thing that happens to them, they go off down that path, right? They're constantly going in circles. They never travel that far from their point of origin. And it says here in Matthew 7:26, everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand, and the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. And great was the fall of it. You see, when you have your roots in, okay, here's the simple deal. I know we spend our whole lives trying to find some level of comfort, right? And some level of happiness, and hoping that the people around us that we love don't die, and hoping that bad things don't happen to us. And we're so consumed with this that, you know, you got a whole group of people out there that want their health care done for free because they figure that if somebody else could just pay them, then they, I don't know, they could just live at the doctor's office maybe, and he could make sure that they live forever, right? And that no bad thing would happen. They could just be wrapped in bubble wrap and nothing bad would ever happen to them, right? But here's the deal. Bad stuff happens to us. Right? We all die. And when we die, it's usually, unless we've been a really horrible person, it's bad for somebody else. It hurts them. Our passing does. And tragic events happen in our lives, and storms, real storms come, and they ruin the things that we have, you know, or storms of life come, and they ruin our relationships, and they ruin the things around us. And if we have built our house on a firm foundation, and if we're like trees, then we shake in the wind, you know, but we don't move. But if we're like chaff, or we're built on a weak foundation, then what happens? Our house falls. Our house falls. Now, Ephesians 4. Go with me to Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4:11. It says, and he gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors and teachers, to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children, tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ. Okay? So the point of the church, right, is to help with the grounding of the trees, is to help with the propagation of the word, so that we don't get, when the storms come, and not just storms of life, but storms of doctrine, right? Because as the country kind of sloshes over, and I have more friends that are more bold about their atheism now, you know, and they like to come out and try to evangelize me when they've been telling me for years not to evangelize them, and now they want to come over and they want to have a chat about how I need to become an atheist, you know, and it's gotten a little bit ridiculous. I almost wonder how long it is before one of them comes by with a pamphlet, you know, to my house, right? So it's absurd, okay? You know, we can't talk to them that way, supposedly. That's bad. You know, go away, Christian. But they want to come and evangelize you, right? So, but this is these are winds, these are these strange doctrines, and we can get carried away with this stuff unless we have a bearing point, right? Unless we have a foundation and our roots sunk somewhere, right? Because then we end up like chaff. Oh man, I don't know, maybe he's right. You know, my goodness, I haven't read that book. I'll have to look at this pamphlet he gave me. No, right? So we have to keep our eyes focused and our blindfolds off. The last contrast in Psalms 1, the way of the righteous and the way of the wicked. So it says here in 5 and 6, it says, therefore, now therefore what? So the wicked are like chaff. So it says, because they're like chaff, they will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. The Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Do we have an ignorant God? Is that why he doesn't know the way of the wicked? Does God not know the way of the wicked? Does he look at him in confusion and say, man, I don't know where you're going. I just can't figure it out. You're jacking and juvenile all over the place, and I can't find out where you're going. You know, are they able to hide from God? Right? Was Jonah able to hide from God? You know, he got on a boat, he hid in the hull, and then he couldn't hide from God. Right? No, of course not. The whole point of that passage is not to say that the wicked have found some magical way of eluding God, but rather to show us that the righteous, right? Because he says the Lord knows the way of the righteous. Now ask yourself, why? Why does the Lord know the way of the righteous? The Lord knows the way of the righteous. Okay, I think this is important. The Lord knows the way of the righteous because it is his way. So who's the righteous in this chapter? The righteous is found up in verse 2. His delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He's not inventing his own way. Okay, the righteous is not somebody that God looks down on. God is not capricious. He doesn't look down on somebody and say, you know, you, I like you. Okay, now unless you're a Calvinist, you might believe this. But he looks down on him and says, you, I like you, you're a good guy. You're off doing all sorts of funky stuff, but I know your way, so I'm going to take care of it. This guy over here, I just can't figure out what he's doing. He's going to perish. No. He knows the way of the righteous because it's his way. Because the way of the righteous is the way of the Lord. The righteous man is the one who's taken the time to figure out what's in the Bible and what that way is and then walked that way. Okay? Now here's an important point I want to get across tonight, though, too, before I close here. There's a contrast here that's getting hidden. Because I want to ask a question or a series of questions. Right? Is there some middle ground here? Is there a middle way? This doesn't seem to be, does there? But wait a second. Okay, here in this country, you know, we work and we know a lot of people that aren't Christians, but they don't seem really wicked. And they don't think of themselves as wicked. Now see, we have a sort of a there's always sort of a cultural agreement on who the wicked is, aren't there? Right? I mean, you just mentioned the name Charlie Manson, right? I mean, oh, come on. We all just agree that poor Charlie is wicked. I mean, that's no problem. I mean, I've never met anybody that says, no, I don't think he is. No, Charlie's wicked. And that crazy, loopy, you know, evil, wicked piece of filth last week that came out, you know, I mean, all of us know who that is, the guy who kidnapped that kid, you know, and did all sorts of Fruit Loopy stuff, right? Okay, so that guy's wicked, right? Now, everybody can agree on that. So we put those guys in a little bucket, and maybe they're the ones that Psalms 1 is talking about. And then you've got the righteous. Yeah, okay, they're the ones that are paying attention to the Bible all the time. But maybe there's this middle ground, right? And if I was a good chartsman, I would probably make a box here, and it'd be a middle ground, right? And those people are the ones that, you know, they just kind of live their lives, and they're good lives. They don't have a lot of time for God and church, and they don't believe in organized religion, but they're okay for the most part, right? And you got, they're not wicked. They're not like those weird funky. They're no Charles Manson over here. And okay, so they don't go to church all the time. They're not as good as those goody two shoes who also have problems but try to hide it across the street and go to church all the time every Sunday. They even see them leaving twice a day, and that's just, you know, they're not like that. They're out there playing golf, but that's fine. And you know, maybe there's a middle ground. We kind of have this view. We really do. And I know that we don't consciously hold it, but culturally there's a view in this country that there's a middle ground. Okay, but it doesn't exist in the Psalms. God does not say, "For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, the way of the wicked will perish, and there'll be a few other people that'll be okay too." It doesn't say that. It says the way of the righteous. Remember who the righteous is. Guy who meditates on the law of the Lord day and night, right? I mean, that's carried all the way through this one chapter. It's hard to lose that bead. That guy, he's on the way of the Lord. He's on this road, right? You can see him. He's standing on this path. He's walking along this path, okay? And the path is well made because the God is the maker of the street, right? He laid down the cobblestones. He knows where that path is. It's a little bit like God said, okay, at some point, guys, I'm going to nuke everything else except that road, okay? You wander off in a camp for a while or something, and if you get lucky and haven't nuked the road yet, then maybe you'll be okay as long as you get back on the road, right? But there's nothing other than that road that survives at the last day, okay? I think that's one of the main kind of points of Psalms here at the end. The Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. I think my sneezing set off a bunch of people who are trying to get rid of chaff, or else it's the smoke. But now see, and this too is a biblical concept, Hebrews 12. Now, you don't have to turn there because it's a really short verse, but in Matthew 24:35, the Lord said, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away." Right? So he already says right there, and Jesus establishes already that there's a road, right? And if you walk on the road, when everything else is destroyed, then you're fine, okay? But then when we go to Hebrews, we're going to find something else that doesn't get shaken. There's something else that doesn't get destroyed, okay? That doesn't get nuked. So he says here in Hebrews 12, 25 to 29, "See that you do not refuse him who is speaking. For if they did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth, much less will we escape if we reject him who warns from heaven. At that time his voice shook the earth, but now he has promised, 'Yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens.'" This phrase, "yet once more," indicates the removal of things that are shaken, that is, things that have been made, in order that the things that cannot be shaken may remain. So, stopping there for just a minute. So what is he saying there? He's saying exactly what I said before, right? God has established a road, a way, a place, you know, it's like a fallout shelter, right? He says, you go here, you'll be fine, okay, when the bombs start falling. All right. When I start raining death from heaven, then if you're here, you're good. Okay? He says, and it says here, "yet once more," this phrase, "yet once more," indicates the removal of things that are shaken, that is, things that have been made. Now, we talked some in the high school class this morning about the fact that, you know, everything we see around us is made. It's created. This flesh is made and created. This world, everything around us is made and created. That means here that the passage in Hebrews 12 talks about the fact that everything will be destroyed that we understand and know. All this created things, all that has been made. And it says, in order that the things that cannot be shaken may remain. So we got to find out what cannot be shaken, because he's about to tell us about the fallout shelter. It says, "Therefore let us be grateful, receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, and thus let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and offer our God as consuming fire." Now, what is it that he said there that cannot be shaken? The kingdom cannot be shaken. Okay? So now we know of two things. Christ tells us that his words will never pass away. Okay? So we know that the word will not pass away, and the kingdom, which is built on top of that word, okay, will also not pass away. So the whole key here is to be in the kingdom when the time comes, to be on the road when he decides to destroy every other way. For the way of the wicked, aka everything else but this, right? Okay, everything else but the word, every other way but that way will be destroyed. And only those in the kingdom, only those who are in the kingdom built on top of the word survive, right? That's the way that works. So the picture we have here is of this great storm. This is what I keep picturing. You know, I keep picturing one of those after effects. And I know somebody's going to say, no, it's not going to be water, it's fire next time, Justin. And I agree with that. But I don't have, I don't really see a lot of camera work and great disasters, that are like huge conflagrations. I mean, we might know if you're watching the TV with the wildfires, I don't know. But what I'm thinking of is I'm thinking of those huge floods, right? And you always see somebody and the helicopters going around, trying to find survivors, and you see somebody clinging to something that's immovable, right? Maybe a tree that hasn't been uprooted by the waters yet, right? But everything else is moving around them. Everything else is shifting, and everything else is not secure, right? And if you fall in that torrent, you're lost. So you find people clinging. They're sitting at the tops of their roofs, right? They're trying to get to high ground. They're trying to get something stable and secure. And that's really the way that this world is, because everything around us, even now, everything around us is moving. The things that we believe today, the things that are accepted knowledge now, those things will be mocked tomorrow, right? We know this to be true. I mean, C.S. Lewis said it one time. He said, our era, too, is a period in history with many unquestioned assumptions that later generations will find absurd. I mean, some of them are already now beginning to find them absurd. Already they've shifted global warming to climate change because it's embarrassing that they're, that there's been so many cool seasons, right? We got to start using different words and run the spinmeisters so it's not embarrassing in a few years. And then in a few years when you say, well, isn't this kind of like global warming? Oh, it's nothing like global warming. Nothing like that, right? It's totally different. This is real. That global warming was just, I don't know what that was. Ignore that man behind the curtain, right? So we have this thing, right? We have this change and shifting all around us. We have to cling to something secure, or we wander in circles, right? We wander with the shifting prevailing wind. It's like being in a river with a very strong but slow current. You don't even know you're moving, yet you are. That's kind of the way the world works and the way the culture works, right? Unless you're constantly meditating on it, you lose track. You begin to track one way or the other. So the question I want to leave you with tonight is going back to Hebrews 12. When all is shaken and the kingdom is all that is left, you have to ask yourself, are you going to be part of what is shaken or part of what is not? Will you be in the way of the Lord, the way that he knows, in other words, his way, or will you be in the way that will perish, right? There's no middle ground. There's no third way. I know that people want to believe there's a third way. They want to believe there's a third way when they don't want to do the hard things, right? And they're not really hard. Quite frankly, brothers, it's not hard for me to be here with you. I feel kind of bad sometimes because, people, they find it so hard to go to church, but I like going to church, and I don't have a problem with that, So you make that easy, and that's a good thing, I suppose. But people don't realize that there isn't a third way, okay? You cannot ignore the church, the kingdom, the word, which is the Bible, and not be swept away when the final tempest comes. Let me say that again. You cannot ignore the word and the church and not be swept away when the final tempest comes. Period. You can't. And God's been very clear. He has said, I've set up safe areas. Get there while you can, because when I destroy everything, those are going to be the only things left. That's it. Lots of people are going to be shocked about that. I mean, I thought you were a loving God. I don't get it. No. He is. I'm very loving. I've got fallout shelters. I built them strong and secure. I sent my son down there to die for them. And you got to get your hiney in there as fast as you possibly can, right? And I've given you, most of you got 80 years or something like that, right? Go! You get a long life, and then people get confused about why a loving God would destroy all these people. It doesn't make any sense. You have to ask yourself, are you there or are you not? So the weatherman here is certain and sure. There's a 100% chance of this happening. You join the kingdom through repentance and baptism. You seek the word daily. These things are your only hope. They're the only thing you have to stand on. They're the fallout shelter. They're your blindfold getting off so you can draw a clear line. You've got to get there now. If you need to get there, would you please come now as we stand to sing the song that's been selected?